Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast. We are your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The movie buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Rusted metal, Batman.
Huh?
The ground, it's all metal. It's full of holes, you know? Holy.
Oh.
Hey, what's up, Real Talk community? If you're listening to this episode right now, I have to assume that you have seen...
Hey, guys. Welcome. Man, I don't know if you guys have seen it. I'm wearing my Batman shirt. I'm so pumped up for this episode, Real Talk community. I got to tell you, I've been flying around like a bat all day. The movie buddy Conway here. Welcome, Real Talk community. We're in for another episode today. And tonight, we're going to be talking about a great film. 2008's Dark Knight by Christopher Nolan. We had Matt Hosley on our Christopher Nolan episode. It was absolutely stellar. The Dark Knight is a superhero film. It's the second of its kind. Heath Ledger absolutely kills it in this movie. One of the best Jokers ever portrayed, if you ask my opinion. And Chris Nolan was at his peak of his bumps during this film. So I'm so glad we're doing this tonight. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. What do you guys think? Are you guys excited for The Dark Knight tonight?
I love The Dark Knight. One of my favorite comic book movies. And Gabe, I'm really excited you chose this movie above anything else, because I think it really touches on some really important subjects in today's world. It's very thematically close to what we've been going on through with the pandemic. And, you know, as I rewatched it, because I did rewatch it, it really, you know, it kind of touched my heart. And it really, I think, taught me how to be human. You know, it really kind of, it hit me on a higher level that I never have experienced before. And I'm just excited to share those experiences with the audience and show them what I've learned, you know, from a higher plane of existence in a lot of ways.
That's awesome, guys. But April Fools, we're not talking about The Dark Knight. We're talking about an even better movie. We're talking about, of course, Batman Forever.
Oh. No, not at all, actually.
Wait a minute.
What?
What? Wait a minute. This is all... Oh, Gabe.
What?
I'm so confused right now. Like, you know, you announced to the audience we're going to cover Batman Forever, which, you know, we collectively groan. And then you come on, you trick us into think we're actually going to be talking about a good movie. Got T-Man excited. We just found out that movie taught him to be a human. And then now you're pulling the rug out from underneath us and you're going to Batman Forever?
Yeah. I mean, you guys got notes on that, right?
You know, Gabe, you messed up a lot on Real Talk in the past.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues. Just different things. We don't want to go into it right now. We don't have to talk about it right now. But I thought you had just redeemed yourself. I said, you know what, Gabe? I've forgiven you for all these, you know, digressions and regressions that you've given us. And The Dark Knight is your redeemer. And you just, I don't know what to say now, honestly.
Well, here's one thing I'll say, T-Man. Okay. Think about it like this, okay? Gabe invites his friends, like back from around where he lives. He invites them on the show. He interrupts me as I'm trying to do the introduction to this episode.
Yeah, I've tried.
He comes on. He starts, you know, going all into stuff, starts talking about Batman, all this. Doesn't even introduce his friends as guests.
Oh, they're just here still.
They're just here waiting through this whole thing. So.
Listen, they know me. Everybody knows Matt. You know, they know me. I was in calculus with Luke in, like, high school. I sat, like, diagonal from him. Now, everybody knows Luke and Matt. No, they don't need an introduction. They're popular. They got a podcast. What are we going to do? Matt's the famous, like, house where the peppermint patty caper is. Everybody reads about that in the paper.
And if audience, you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to our Christopher Nolan episode and you'll hear a pretty hilarious story about a peppermint patty. It was really good. But Gabe, if you don't mind, let me try to steer us back on track here. Let me at least get our guests introduced. You got anything else?
No, just guys, settle down. If you had all your notes on The Dark Knight, it's no big deal. all of our non-listeners are here thinking that this was a fishing podcast, and they're confused that this is going on anyway. So don't worry. You can just make up stuff as you go.
I really do get a lot of anglers contacting us, asking us why on our fishing podcast we start talking about movies. So, yes. Okay. All right. Here we go. Audience, if you're listening to this episode, I assumed you saw the title. So you, as the listeners, knew we would be talking about Batman, which in a lot of cases would be a good thing. However, you also saw that we're not even talking about Tim Burton's Batman. We're not talking about the Nolan trilogy, although Gabe fooled us. We're not even talking about what Zack Snyder has done recently with Batman. You saw that this was a full freaking episode dedicated to 1995's Batman Forever. Yet you still downloaded the episode, which means you're my kind of people. Anyway, welcome everyone to tonight's episode. Our very popular Guilty Pleasure series returns, and ironically enough, we're taking you back to 1995. So not only did 1995 give us the Guilty Pleasure Mortal Kombat, it also gave us Batman Forever. And honestly, I thought that was a pretty cocky title, Batman Forever. That's a little Sandlot reference. But I used to think, Warner Brothers, do you really think we're going to be talking about freaking Batman Forever? Forever? Yet here we are a quarter of a century later. We're still talking about it. Audience, is Batman a guilty pleasure? That's what we're going to determine tonight. If you've missed our other Guilty Pleasures episode, this is where we will review and carry on about one film that we feel fits into this Guilty Pleasures mold. So to qualify, the movie has to be dismissed by the majority of critics and or audience. And when you look at it in retrospect, it holds up poorly. But for whatever reason, people still enjoy it or still have fun watching it. So to end the episode, each host will let you know whether they think it's a good movie, a bad movie, or just if people think it's a true guilty pleasure. So enough introduction. Let's get over to our guests of honor. We've got Matt and Luke Hosley of the Lost Art of Podcast. How's things going tonight, gentlemen?
Hello, hello. Gabe, you mentioned calculus, but I have much more fond memories with you and Senior Johnson's Spanish class. I was trying to remember your Spanish name. All I could come up with was Brutus, but that does not sound right.
No, it was something weird like Pepe. I think he called me
Pepe. Oh, it was Pepe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what I'll be calling Gabe from now on.
I did not have classes with Gabe. This is Matt. But I most of my childhood spent with Gabe. We were both shirtless at the pool.
That's not weird.
No, it's not weird.
We had a mutual friend with a pool.
I want to hear more.
And everybody hung out there.
More. Maybe after the podcast.
Yeah.
Also, if we're talking about Spanish names, I took French, and my French name was Dominique because I was really into the Magnificent Seven gymnast, and I like Dominique Mocianu, so that was my French name. That's if we're going down that path.
I don't know if we're going to call you that the whole episode or not, Matt.
You can call me Matt.
Pepe's funnier.
Gabe, you're what the French call les incompetents.
Oh, that's good.
Wow, Home Alone reference. Nice. Third movie for the night.
So, Luke, Matt, tell us what's been going on lately over at the Lost Art of Podcast, and let the audience know a little about your show and where they can listen to episodes.
Well, I believe our most recent episode was we broke down our each of the hosts broke down our top five movies from the 19. I don't even remember the year. What was it?
95.
87.
Not even close.
1987. Hey, but we've done 95 before, have we not?
No.
We've done
94.
Who remembers past episodes, fellas?
We did music of 95. Yeah.
Luke's all about the future. Luke's all about looking forward.
He's looking forward to 95.
Yeah. Speaking of the future, our next episode, we tend to focus on nostalgia of the 80s and 90s. We look at movies, music, just items in general, and actually icons. And our next episode is on Bo Jackson.
Bo knows. And I love your icon episodes. I love the Mike Tyson episode and the Pee Wee Herman episode. I think Matt said, weirdly enough, Matt told me that story the first time about the Pee Wee, you know, in the movie gallery. I actually had forgotten about what happened to that poor guy. But he said that was one of your all's most downloaded episodes, weirdly enough, too.
we do a lot of episodes on famous people named Mike. We did Michael Jackson, Mike Tyson, Michael Jordan. So we're venturing out and doing Pee-wee and Bo Jackson. The Lost Art of Podcast, we're on, you know, all the podcasting platforms, on Facebook at the Lost Art of Podcast if you search for it. We don't spam your page. Literally, none of us are on Facebook that much. So when we release a new episode, we'll put some photos and stuff up just to remind you to go download it. But if you like to listen to people talk about things that don't matter anymore, we're your guys.
Nice.
Did anybody else pick up that Matt was giving like a little shot to us? I think because we've been posting more on our Facebook page, and I think he's saying, "Yo, Real Talk, slow down on the Facebook post. Nobody cares. They don't want to interact with you that much."
I'm gonna tell you though,
I've
that
been
bumper
enjoying
sticker
the Facebook post.
Did you really find that bumper sticker, or was that just a picture you found online of the "I'd rather be watching"? Whatever it was,
I'd rather be watching the 1999 masterpiece, The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser. It was really good.
And you guys aren't in our group conversation, but Wes went on to come up with a bumper sticker that says Macaulay Culkin turned into Jigsaw. It is later.
He posted that.
That online as well. I want that sticker on my van, but he hasn't made any for me yet.
No, so. I think I put Kevin McAllister grew up to be the Jigsaw killer.
Yeah. I want
That'd be a good bumper sticker.
Yeah,
it would. The Mummy bumper sticker. Like, did you actually see that in person, or did you just see it online?
I did not. This guy that I follow online saw it, and he took it. The sticker was in a parking lot, and he took it and posted it and was telling people about it. He was like, "This is amazing."
So it wasn't really a meme. It was someone you knew actually saw that bumper sticker.
Yes, it was not a meme. It was an actual bumper sticker.
That's awesome. That makes me like it that much more. Yeah. But if you all don't mind, I will say I watch a lot of movies. I have 5 more movies to watch to see every movie nominated for an Oscar this year in any category. And I will watch them all. But I just launched a movie review YouTube channel for fans of reviews on YouTube. And I release a new movie review every Monday, and they're between 2 and 5 minutes long, and they're all spoiler free. So I wanted to give myself a shout out. Sorry I didn't ask about that beforehand. Feel free to cut it out.
No, that's great. I mean,
I'm actually excited about that.
And yeah. We see your reviews that you do on Facebook. Is that the type of material you're going to be bringing over, putting them on YouTube? They're really, really good audience. You have to follow Matt.
He will post about it on Facebook, but not that often. You know,
That's right.
Well, I gotta give Wes a shout out. He was the first person to subscribe to the YouTube channel once I launched it. So,
woo!
Yeah,
look at that. Gabe didn't introduce you. He took long time to subscribe to your
YouTube page. I haven't yet. I just found out about it.
I think Matt and I are better friends than Gabe and Matt.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
Sorry, Gabe.
Gabe didn't even know about it.
So. Luke, let me bring you in here. Let me ask you one more question, and I've got to know. You know, you're going about your life. You're doing your thing. You get a notification, some type of message from Gabe. You're probably like, "Oh, Lord, what is this about?" And you look down and you say, and it says something along the lines of, "Hey, do you want to come on our show and talk about Batman Forever?" What were your initial thoughts when Gabe asked you to come and do this episode?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I've listened to a lot of your all's episodes. I don't listen to episodes when you all talk about movies I haven't seen, which is a lot of them, but Karate Kid, Sandlot, I caught your, you know, Forever reference. I was listening to that yesterday. I was honored, to be perfectly honest, because I like the show. I like what you guys are doing. And I also am a huge Batman fan. At the time that this movie came out, I was 10 years old and I was all for it. I had, you know, the McDonald's cups. I was listening. I think I had the single Kiss from a Rose. I was excited to get back and see this movie. We'll see where I landed later.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to say. You know, well, I appreciate the kind words. And now I'm also interested, after we go through the movie, what your final verdict is going to be. So that's a great setup. But audience, this is Gabe's episode. It was his choice. He wanted to do Batman Forever. He wanted to do it as a guilty pleasure. So I'm going to flip the episode back over to him.
All right, guys, so we're going to do 2 quick segments before we get into our walkthrough. And the first segment was a fun little thing that we did on Facebook. We asked everybody, what is your favorite Batman villain? So I'm going to go around the panel, and I'm going to ask everybody their favorite Batman villain. But since I'm selfish, I'm going to ask myself first, hey, Gabe, what's your favorite Batman villain? Well, and I just don't want you guys to steal my Batman villain. Mine is, guys, just in case you're wondering, mine's the Penguin. The Penguin can be found in Batman Returns. Danny DeVito knocked it out of the park with the Penguin. And he's also one of my favorite Batman villains for a couple of reasons. He's like kind of like the Mankind of villains. You know, you see Mankind, you're like, man, I'm going to get a cage match with this guy. He's not going to do anything to me. But that's what Danny DeVito is. He's fat. He's a Penguin. He has only three appendages on his hands. Like, what is this guy going to do to me? But then he thinks outside the box. Me and him have a lot in common. Look, he has a bunch of flightless birds. He has penguins. He has an army of penguins that fight for him. I have an army of chickens. Well, let me tell you guys. I don't know if you guys know this. I own five chickens. I've been training them all week. I've been putting missile launchers on their little backs and training them to go where I want them to go. You and Wes keep messing with me, T-Man. The last thing you're going to see before you die is a chicken with a missile launcher strapped on its back. And, you know, just so you guys know, I have been thinking of my catchphrases. You know, Matt, you and Luke are safe. Peppermint Patty guy, better watch out for one of my chicken missile launchers. But my villain catchphrase, check this out, Kentucky Fried Death. Or after I kill T-Man, I'll say, don't order extra crispy. What do you guys think?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Or you could say, it looks like you ordered extra crispy if you're going to missile launch and blow them up.
Why not go with chicken is going to order out for you?
I like that one.
Is that Spaceballs reference?
I mean, yeah, it's a Spaceballs.
And I just watched that movie, so I completely got it. And, you know, I mean, he has the best underground lair. I think he has a giant rubber duck he runs around on. Man, he's got it all. He's got infinite, you know, I'm thinking about making a giant chicken that I ride around on. We'll see. You know, I'm working on it, guys. But anyway, so let's go to Tommy. Tommy, what's your favorite Batman villain?
Hey, Gabe, that's a good point. First off, I don't know what's going on with your chickens trying to kill me. What did I do to them? Yes, I have threatened them many times, many times. But, you know, they deserve it. Honestly, they do deserve it. But that's a whole nother discussion. So favorite Batman villain, I had to think long and hard about this, but I have to go with my boy Bane. I mean, Bane is the man. Any villain that's roided up like him but talks like Kermit the Frog, how can you not want to root for him as a villain? First off, you can say, which Bane are you going for? You going with the Bane from Batman and Robin, who's like totally HGH'd up? I tried to get swole like him in the gym for a while. Didn't work, but that's a whole other story. But then we're really talking about Tom Hardy's Bane. And all joking aside, I really do love him as the villain. I don't even know if Bane is a good villain, honestly. Like, I can't even tell you what his plot is. Like, what is he trying to do in that movie? Nobody really knows. He, like, has this nuclear bomb in Gotham, but what is he trying to do with it? Nobody cares. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but his voice, it's just one of the great voices of all time. I could just listen to him say anything, like, over and over. I just love it. I'll just watch YouTube clips of him talking. That's how much I love his Bane. So that's who I'm going with, Bane.
Isn't it Sean Connery and Kermit the Frog, to be redundant?
That's what Tom Hardy said he based it off of. But it's just very, like, what I want to imagine is, like, so you know Tom Hardy, he always, first of all, always has to do a voice. Nobody even knows what his real voice is, I don't think. But he always has to do a voice in these movies. But I want to know, like, okay, so he shows up on the set. You know Christopher Nolan runs, like, a very impeccable set. He's always got a suit on. You know, he's ready, you know, he's ready to roll. So Tom Hardy shows up, and then Tom Hardy starts using that voice. Like, what do you think Christopher Nolan did the first time he heard that? Was he like, oh, God, what is this? It's too late for that point. He can't, like, fire. You can't fire Tom Hardy. You've already started. Yeah. He's like, do you think he was just like, oh, my God. And he just was like, just go, I guess. Do you think he had an issue with it?
I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah, he'll fix it in post. Well, if you guys remember, when they released Dark Knight Returns, is that what it's called? Yeah, Dark Knight
Rises.
Returns. Rises, one of them. It had all sorts of audio issues when it first came out. Its first weekend, a lot of people complained that that Tom Hardy's voice was too low. So they had to go back and and bring up the audio. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe he did try to clamp down so people couldn't really, like, hear it.
Well, but then he didn't learn anything from it, because the next three movies, the score is 10 times louder than the vocals, and you can't understand anything in Interstellar or Dunkirk or Tenet.
Yeah, he doubled down for sure. He's like, all right, I'm going all in. So that's my pick, Gabe.
I like a man that when he should double up, he doubles down. Well, I'm going to go down to Matt Hosley, the Peppermint Patty Caper person himself. What's your favorite Batman villain?
So I actually had a hard time with this. I think I'm on Wes's team here. I'm not a huge superhero movie guy at all, really. I've seen a lot of them, and most of them I'll probably not watch again. But Batman, I keep coming back to, and it would be easy to go with something like Heath Ledger's the Joker, who, in my opinion, is the best Joker and the most iconic villain. But then I also really like the Riddler from an audience's perspective. I love solving the riddles, even though we'll get into Jim Carrey's performance later. That's another thing. But I decided I'm going to go with Dr. Jonathan Crane, a.k.a. Scarecrow, who, honestly, I did not ever even hear of until Batman Begins. And I thought he was such an awesome villain. So I did some research, and it turns out he was first appeared in 1941 in the comics. So he'd been around a long time. His whole shtick, I guess, is he is a psychology professor who uses experimental toxins to exploit the fears of his victims. And he was disaccredited, I guess, because of what he was doing. So now he basically goes out into Gotham and just kidnaps people and makes them his guinea pigs. And what to me is so scary about it is that he uses this toxin and it brings out your worst fears and makes them come to life. So for me, if I ever ran into him, something with spiders. I don't know what, but it would be something with spiders, and I would not be okay with it. And for me, I guess what makes it so scary is that he's not doing it to gain wealth. He's doing it just to further his research, and he's smart, and he's evil, and he's got that cool mask, like burlap sack mask or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just think from somebody who could potentially really exist, that's our guy. And he's kind of scary to me.
Wes, what do you got for us?
I also had a very difficult time with this as well. It's definitely the Joker. What I had a difficult time with is which version of the Joker that I like best. Because after you go through the trauma of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, you know, you were like, Jack Nicholson stood out so much from his performance from 89's Batman. And that was the Batman that I truly grew up on. Saw it in the drive-in with my family back in 89 whenever it first came out. And he really steals the show. And I love Michael Keaton, too. But he really steals the show in that movie. T-Man often jokes that the movie should have been called Joker rather than Batman. Because, again, just it really focuses on Jack Nicholson's character. But then, you know, whenever they announced that Heath Ledger was going to portray the Joker, there was a collective groan amongst Batman fans.
Me too. I was like, he can't be a Joker.
It was a very odd pick at the time. And then once you get in there and you see the very first scene with him whenever he pulls off that mask at the bank, and he's got, you know, the scars on his face, and, you know, he says something about the little stranger. I can't remember what the full quote is. You're like, okay, what do we got here? And then you get the pencil scene or the pen scene where he slams that guy's head down into the pen, and you're just like, this is awesome. So, Gabe, to answer your question, I think I'm going to lean towards Jack Nicholson's Joker just the slightest.
No.
But I love them both just so very much. So.
Wes, you forgot about you had two good ones there, but you forgot about Apex Joker, and that's Jared Leto.
I meant to black myself on that one, so I didn't even know what that was until you just mentioned it again, and it all came flooding back.
So a couple of years ago, I went to Shoney's to eat breakfast because their breakfast is like 59 cents for all you can eat. It's like super cheap. And there was the guy at the booth next to me had Jared Leto's Joker tattooed on his arm. And I'm like, oh, I mean, come on, man. He's like,
that's when you know you've made a good choice for breakfast.
Yeah, that's true. I was like, man, I did not know this is the kind of people I was going to be eating with, but I can't get behind.
Here's the thing, Matt. You didn't know me at the time. That was me. I'm a Jared Leto fan. So
let's see the tattoo.
But, hey, you guys missed one of my favorite Jokers. What about Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, great Joker. Love him as the Joker. Yeah, I thought he was great.
Yeah. The thing about the Joker that I like is that you don't know his backstory. So seeing his backstory kind of ruined it for me. I thought Joaquin Phoenix did a great job, but I like the mystery of Heath Ledger's Joker, or even Jack Nicholson's. Like, you see them now and you know nothing that happened before. So you don't know why they're crazy.
So I do like what Wes's choice is for once. You know, I'll stand behind it. All right. So, Luke, what Batman villain have you brought to the table?
Well, first I want to say that I'm disappointed that in all that, nobody even thought to bring up Mark Hamill as Joker.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point. His voice performance.
The problem is there really isn't a bad portrayal of Joker, you know, other than Jared Leto. But if we're not counting that one, the villain that is my favorite is the Red Hood, which has a Joker connection. But the Red Hood that I'm referring to is the second Red Hood. So after Dick Grayson grew up and into his own hero as Nightwing, Batman took a street youth named Jason Todd to be the new Robin. It wasn't long before the Joker had kidnapped and killed Jason, the new Robin, by beating him to death with a crowbar. Years later, a new masked vigilante calling himself the Red Hood is taking over all of the drug dealers and going after Black Mask in a brutal fashion. And every time Batman tries to catch him, he can't, because this man knows all of Batman's tricks and always gets away. Can Batman find out who is under the Red Hood? I'll just go ahead and tell you. It's Jason Todd.
Oh, man.
He wasn't dead?
He was dead, but there's, you know, comic books.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They can do what they want.
Yeah.
I'm just glad. Luke, I feel like you're a real Batman fan. I'm glad we got a Batman expert on here. Not like
That's
Gabe.
Why I brought him.
Gabe has his Batman shirt on. Gabe, you ain't no damn Batman fan.
Look at my enthusiasm. I brought
it
him off. On the
Luke's
show.
Got, Luke's a real fan here.
I'm going to read a couple of our Facebook comments. We asked this to our Facebook group. I like several of these comments. First, I got to give Nasu Shah a shout out. He threw the Joker out there. I hope I pronounced that right. Don't hold it against me if I didn't. David Coran, my buddy, he said, my favorite Batman villain is Chris O'Donnell in Batman Forever when he refuses to do what he's told and ends up causing more trouble. I agree, David Coran. Thank you for that statement. Matt Britt said, just rewatched Batman 1989 and he's the GOAT. And Jack Nicholson's Joker is the GOAT. And I completely agree. Kyle Gerkins also agreed with him on that. McKay Bennett said, my favorite Batman antagonist is Crippling Depression. And I didn't realize she was serious with that, and I laughed after that. That's another instance where I should think before I speak, but no, that's actually true. He suffers with several psychosis disorders, so that actually could be a Batman villain. I have no idea what Preston Driver was talking about. He said Josh Whedon. Does anybody know? Can anybody fill me in on the reference?
Probably what he's saying is that in the recent, Justice League, and so that makes him a villain because he made a bad movie with Batman in it.
There we go. Lucas Hosley said the Condiment King also looks awesome. He's got a machine gun hand looking thing, but I don't know who the Condiment King is.
You know that shoots ketchup and mustard, right?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's convenient then. Yeah, he's a good Batman.
These are confusing, Gabe.
Yeah, nothing needs to be said about that. Everybody needs ketchup and mustard all the time. All right. Brandy Joe says, man, I have to go with Catwoman from Batman Returns. Michelle Pfeiffer owned that role. I agree. Bill Van Vagel said, the Penguin, the Burgess Meredith version.
That's from Batman
you
66.
From Adam West show.
Oh, yes. No, I do like that one.
Yeah, and Burgess Meredith also is Rocky's trainer from Rocky.
That's what he's here for, guys. Anyway, I didn't do the song before. I'll do that one on your all show. Corey Lang said, riddle me this, riddle me that. Riddler was his favorite. Tommy said, of course, Bane. Dave Becker said, and I love this comment. In the comics, my favorite was the Joker. My favorite all-time DC comic book is Batman Detectives comic issue 476. And then he said he also went on to say he actually liked Nicholson, Ledger, and Phoenix. And then Russ Carter, my man, brought up Mr. Freeze himself. What do you guys think about that? Are you glad that that popped into our villain discussion?
Didn't he post a picture of Arnold, though?
No, it's Arnold in his Mr. Freeze costume.
Right.
Nice.
I love Arnold's Mr. Freeze. It created soundboards nationwide.
Chill, Gabe, chill.
Oh, God.
In the last one, Matt Wood said he's a huge comic book nerd, and he said the greatest villain is either Joe Chill or the man who murdered Batman's parents himself. So,
Gabe, I just want to add to that real quick that if the audience wants a good time, just look up Arnold's ice puns from Batman and Robin. That is about 20 times better than the movie if you just watch it like that.
That's awesome. Yes. Well, guys, thank you for the comments, and we'll just shoot back around, and let's do your favorite Batman portrayal of all time, and I'm going to go in reverse order. Let's hit it with Luke first.
All right, I'm going back to the cartoon world again, and I have to go with Peter Weller, his portrayal of Batman in the classic Robat Cop Man. Nothing? No.
I don't even know if that's a real thing or not.
No. Peter Weller played RoboCop, right?
Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah, I thought maybe there was a crossover I didn't know about that I didn't know. See.
Yeah. I was like, being serious too. I was like,
Luke set his Batman like expertise high there, so now he knows he can screw with us the rest of the episode. Like, yeah. These guys don't know anything about Batman.
I don't know. Somebody in the comments was mentioning comic book issues. That's a level above me. But I'm actually talking about
none of us.
I'm talking about the Dark Knight Returns part 1 and 2, and it is based off of the Frank Miller comic from the 80s. 10 years after the last sighting of Batman, a 55-year-old Bruce Wayne brings back the Bat to take on a new violent gang. He is not as fast or as strong as he used to be, but that has only made him more dangerous. Batman's new brutal tactics have caught the attention of the U.S. government, who send in their super secret weapon. Dude, it's the origination of Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, you went a different direction than I was thinking. I thought you meant actor. You're talking about version of Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he went a little deeper than what we were going to go. We were going with favorite actor, but Luke did even awesomer. Yeah.
We can't go deep here. All we can do is like name people's names, and then we're like done. Like
our heads start hurting after
this. Yeah, guys, heads start hurting. Ben,
this is why I brought Luke on the show, guys.
To be perfectly honest, I just want people to know that DC's cartoon universe is so much better than the actual universe, and The Dark Knight Returns is rated R, hard R.
Wes, who is your favorite Batman?
Got to go with Michael Keaton. I think it's nostalgia, but I thought he was just really good at portraying Bruce Wayne, and I love him in the bat suit. Christian Bale, of course, it was the other one that I was thinking about, and I like Christian Bale a lot. I got to go with Michael Keaton. I just feel like he, in my mind, he has always been like my Batman. And whenever I heard that he was coming back potentially as like an older version of Batman, and that's still in discussion right now, I got really excited about that because he's such a great actor. Yeah, I don't like Returns as much as I do Batman, which over the years, Returns has kind of flip-flopped and has become the one that seems to have the bigger cult following now. But I just love him in that original Batman. He plays the suffering of the character, the darkness of the character, and then also whenever he's Bruce Wayne and he's kind of hitting on Kim Basinger's character and stuff. He's just likable and believable. So anyway, that's mine.
Matt, who's your favorite Batman?
I mean, honestly, everything Wes just said is exactly what I feel. I think Michael Keaton is the best Batman. It might be nostalgia talking. I think Batman is better than Batman Returns. Sorry, Gabe. Christian Bale's the second best. The only reason I didn't pick him is because of the stupid voice he uses when he is Batman. but the one thing that I will add is I am looking forward to Edward the Vampire's Batman because he actually is a pretty good actor. I cannot think of his real name right now. Robert Pattinson.
No, I agree. Absolutely.
Thank you, Matt. I'm like that you destroyed my movie and the same time supported Wes. Like that was, I'm actually glad you did that.
Us T2 guys got to stick together.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
He needs help.
I'm friend Gabe.
He's the better. See, Wes invited him on the show and he didn't introduce him anyway. So, Tommy, who is your favorite Batman?
Man, this is a tough choice, Gabe. There's a lot of good options here. I've got to do a split here. First, I'm going to go Christian Bale, but not because of his performance per se, but it's going to be because of what Matt just said, but I'm going to flip it on its head. It's because of that Batman voice.
Oh, I mean, what the hell is he
doing? Remember, he's like, where is she? Like, he's like, what the hell? I mean, that's another thing with Christopher Nolan. You know Christopher Nolan was like, more voice, deeper. He loves those voices. So
oh,
I just,
he introduced a bump into his voice. He was like, can you get this bump into your voice?
The
bump
in the voice. You know, Christian Bale was like, do you want me to do the bump? And he's like, yes, bump it up. there's that. So honestly, Gabe, that's what you should have done. The question should have been, who has the best Batman voice? We'll say that for the next Batman movie.
Yeah, I failed. I failed on multiple.
Yeah. The other one, you know, actually, I got to call out for Ben Affleck, who actually is kind of an underrated Batman. Not a good Batman, but still better than you expected. And I just got to call him out because I never knew I wanted like a weightlifting, super jacked CrossFit Batman before. But there's that scene in Batman versus Superman where he's like pushing all those weights, and there's a huge CrossFit scene. I just love it so much. It's like, what is he doing? What is this scene? But anyway,
yeah, doing chin-ups with a giant boulder hanging from your waist, yes, definitely helps you fight Superman.
I'm like, hell yes, he's about to kick Superman's ass.
But I do like that Batman quite a bit, and me and T-Man both have an affinity for Batman versus Superman, even though it's strange. But anyway, so my favorite Batman is, and this is actually true. I joke a lot on the show, but when I was a kid at my grandparents' house, I remember I used to get to watch the old Batman show, and Adam West is my favorite Batman, and it's for multiple reasons. Like, when I used to watch that show, like, I never noticed how Adam West didn't know everything was serious, but it was kind of like a joke at the same time. Like, he was very serious about the role. And he's just a really good, fun Batman. Like, he's always doing this ridiculous stuff, fighting sharks off of a ladder while he's climbing up into a helicopter. He's got this weird submarine. Or he's carrying a bomb, one of those bombs with a wick on it, and he has to throw it, like, off of a dock. Like, he's doing all this crazy stuff, but Adam West pulls it off. You believe as Batman, and I mean, Family Guy takes a hold of it and puts him as the mayor of the town, and then you got Batman and Family Guy. He just had such an iconic performance that I think we'd be amiss if we didn't talk about it.
I also love Adam West as Batman. In particular, one scene where he pulls up in the Batmobile on the curb, and there's like a cop writing tickets on cars, and Adam West sees him, and he turns back to the Batmobile like he's going to move it, and the cop goes, "That's okay, Batman," and so he goes in and saves the day.
The other thing I love about that show, and I forgot to mention, is the sound effects also have gigantic words on the screen. I like any show where you get your free WAPs and PALs. You don't get that anymore. So that's all I got, guys. We did it justice. We talked some Batmans. Luke told us more about Batman than we ever knew. Thanks, guys. All right, Wes, kick it off. Take us back into the movie.
Let's get into Batman Forever, the reason everybody downloaded this episode, apparently. So Batman Forever is a 1995 superhero film directed by Joel Schumacher. It's the third movie in the Warner Brothers initial film series, although most all of the characters have been replaced by new actors or aren't even mentioned at all. It's supposed to be a direct sequel to 1992's Batman Returns. It stars Val Kilmer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, Nicole Kidman, and Chris O'Donnell. The Wikipedia premise for the film is Batman trying to stop Two-Face and the Riddler in their villainous scheme to extract confidential information from all the minds in Gotham City and use it to learn Batman's identity and bring the city under their control. In hindsight, you'd think it was probably a little bit, there'd be an easier way, you know, to get this information about who Batman is than this completely over-the-top, elaborate, multi-million-dollar, possibly billion-dollar plan, but, you know, I digress.
I'll revert back to last episode. They could have done what Tommy does, where he just basically creeps on people, you know, goes into their bedrooms while, you know.
Yeah, that would have been
on them.
Easier than this whole brainwave deal.
Wait a minute, Gabe. That was just for the episode. I'm not continuing that. That sure was just not for the erotic thriller episode. I promise. I'm not doing that. I might do it tomorrow, but just for more research purposes.
So, guys, there's a lot to talk about with this movie, but one of the biggest things is Michael Keaton being replaced by Val Kilmer as Batman. This, of course, was huge news back in 1994. Keaton was initially attached to the film. He was going to be paid $15 million back in 1994 to be Batman, but ultimately he backed out due to the script and the direction that Joel Schumacher was wanting to go with the story. So, guys, just real quick, how much do you think that this particular movie missed Michael Keaton, and how do you think Val Kilmer did as The Dark Knight?
He couldn't have saved the movie.
No.
Maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but Michael Keaton not being Batman was not the problem in this movie.
I agree with Matt. I think Val Kilmer had everything set up against him. What a lot of people don't realize is McDonald's like almost revolted because of the darkness of Batman and Batman Returns. You know, they wanted the toys. They wanted so there was a lot of pressure from them and the studio that I think destroyed this movie long before Val Kilmer did. I think it didn't help his Batman. I don't think his Batman's as terrible. I mean, none of us mentioned him, but I don't think it's as terrible as the rap it gets.
Rewatching it, I don't think he's that bad. I kind of liked him, for the movie. He's not great. None of us mentioned him as like our favorite one, but he's not bad. I guess that's the best way I can put it. Nowhere near to the level of Michael Keaton, but you're right, Matt. I mean, Michael Keaton couldn't have saved this movie. Nobody could have.
They were writing him Adam West lines and requesting that he deliver them in a Michael Keaton manner. And that didn't work.
Right.
They should have just gone full Adam West for the tone of this movie.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I actually think that Val Kilmer was the best part of this movie, honestly. So, no, you're right. It would have made, the movie a little easier to swallow if the same characters would have been portrayed by the same actors. I mean, even Two-Face Harvey, they changed him. That was Billy Dee Williams was Two-Face from 89's Batman.
In a way, though, I like that there's a new Batman, though, because the movies are just so different than the Michael Keaton one. It doesn't make any sense. Like, honestly, it makes more sense that there is a new Batman because it just feels like a whole new world than, like, if they would have pretended this was Michael Keaton's world. Cause then it really wouldn't have made any sense. But then again, when we get in the movie, we're going to realize it doesn't make any damn sense anyway. So I guess it doesn't matter.
Can you picture Michael Keaton reading that script and being like, ugh. I can't do this.
Which he did.
He's like that. Exactly. I gotta do Multiplicity. That's better than this shit.
But you're missing the best part is that Tommy Lee Jones read the script and was like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, the rumor is like he did. You're right, Luke, and he did go whatever. But he had like a daughter or a stepson that was his son. That wanted him to do it. So he's like, all right, I'll do it.
Okay. He had a bank account that wanted him to do it.
Yeah, probably
that helped too. All right, so let's moving on. I want to take just a minute also to talk through the evolution of the Batman films up to this point, and I've got another question for you guys. So with Batman 1989, we've got a great setup, partial origin story for Batman, some very dark themes, rough images, iffy for kids. My mom literally covered my eyes at the drive-in when Joker's hands started coming out of the water with all the acid burn and all that. We get an iconic villain with Jack Nicholson. The Batman craze for a new generation is born. Then we get Batman Returns. We get a darker film, lots of violence, adult themes, plus a very nasty, truly nasty villain in Penguin. And both Catwoman and Penguin were good. Some people say Returns is a superior film, but whining parents, like Gabe said, complain. The box office wasn't what they wanted it to be. They started planning for a third Batman film with Burton initially attached to direct, but due to the backlash from parents, advertisers, a big one being McDonald's, saying they would not back another Batman film directed by Tim Burton, and there was also diminished box office returns with Batman Returns, the studio approached Burton and told him he was out as director. He did stay on as producer, and honestly, he's the one who handpicked Joel Schumacher, so let that sink in for a minute. And if you think about it, these two choices had huge ramifications from here on out, not only for Batman Forever, but just the Batman franchise going forward. So what are your thoughts here on kind of the evolution of the Batman movies and just anything else in that quick little story that I told?
I would just like to say, I just got to jump in real quick. You know, what a simpler time the early 90s were. You know, the Penguin and that type of stuff could really cause a huge backlash. These days, you got, I think, Cardi B's WAP. You get a WAP toy in the McDonald's Happy Meal these days. Man, things have really changed in a lot of ways.
We've completely avoided Wes's question.
Yeah, I don't think we can even go on from there. I can just get my third point. Well,
that's the best comment we've had.
It was a good comment. But to answer this question, I will say those first two Batmans were awesome. As a kid, I loved them. This one I was looking forward to more than any movie I've ever looked forward to. And the first line in the movie is, "Sir, would you like to take your food with you?" And he goes, "I'll get drive through." And that literally was a McDonald's commercial. And I'm like, okay. And watching it now, it's like that movie is literally nothing but this is what was cool in 1995, and it is not aged well. And so Batman and Robin was worse, so much so that Memento is my favorite movie, as I mentioned on our Christopher Nolan episode. When he directed Batman Begins, I didn't even want to see it because of how bad the last two Batman movies were. What was your question again?
You answered it. Okay. I was just talking about those two decisions by taking Tim Burton off of it and then Michael Keaton not coming back and all this. Those were two huge decisions, and it just started to change the course of Batman. Well, so
my real answer, not a WAP joke, is that honestly, it just shows you once again, I think we can see this over and over again. These studios don't know what the hell they're doing. They're just driven by pure profit and pure greed. And they had Tim Burton's next movie could have been really good again. It would have been really interesting and held up really well. And they panicked and they wanted more money, which they probably did get. This was a big hit. But to your point, Wes, about kind of how it set the stage, it also led to its collapse. So it kind of like they got that momentary hit with Batman Forever. But then within literally one film, it destroyed the entire franchise. Short-sightedness by the studio collapsed the franchise. And honestly, doesn't seem like Warner Brothers has really learned any lessons, because they've done the same thing with the DCU and Superman and Batman all over again.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Do you think this led to the four-quadrant blockbuster? Do you think because they looked at the profit of this, they were like, we can do more of these.
Oh,
we should do more.
Oh, yeah. This time period, and really Batman in a lot of ways, started the huge boom of that, of like the marketing tie-ins and the kids and all of that. And then this, it's a great question, Gabe, because I think this kind of showed the way of what the studios wanted, of like, no, we don't want to like niche target the comic book movie. We want the four quadrant comic book movie.
I was so young at the time that I honestly didn't notice the evolution. I do remember seeing Batman Returns in theaters when I was like, I don't know, when did that come out? 92? So I was 7. I don't know. The Penguin ate a fish.
And a nose?
And a nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher Walken's nose, maybe. Anyway, I liked the lights. I liked the brightness of it at the time. Of course, I was 10. Looking back on it now, well, we'll get into it. I'm glad that they eventually gave it to Christopher Nolan, but I stand by my original comment that the people in charge of the animated DC stuff they know what they're doing way more than the cinematic versions.
I'm going to make you feel a little bit better, Luke. This is, and I've got a confession to make, Real Talk Community. This is my second probably the most watched movie of all time, because I'm the same as Luke. You know, we're the same age, really. I mean, or really close. And when this movie came out, like I had the VHS. We didn't have DVDs yet. We weren't cool. And I watched this VHS more than any other movie because, like Matt and Luke said, I was anticipating it big time. And as a 10-year-old, I didn't know not to love it. And so I can quote the entire first half of this movie verbatim.
So, what was it? I kept saying on our last on the Lost Art of podcast, our last episode was, I loved every movie I saw until I was 12.
And I love that quote.
Yeah.
Well, Gabe, it disturbs me to know that you had the VHS copy of Jurassic Park and you had the VHS copy of Batman Forever, and you watched Batman Forever more.
No, I said I've watched Jurassic Park more. It's my second to most.
Oh, okay.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
All right, the it's last thing I've got I'm close. Here, and I don't really have a question for you, but I found this really interesting about Batman Forever because I think this contributed to the finished product, but there were so much conflict, constant conflict on the set and before they started shooting. The ones I've already given you, you know, with Burton in the studio, that was number one. Then you had Michael Keaton with the studio and with director Joel Schumacher, which ultimately caused him to drop out. Joel Schumacher and Val Kilmer had a lot of issues working together, including a period where Val Kilmer wouldn't talk to him for a full 2 weeks. And they also came close to a physical altercation while making the movie. That is what led to Val not returning for Batman and Robin. Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey had issues working together on set as well. And let me just read this comment from Jim Carrey because I love it so much. When Carrey discovered he was eating dinner at the same restaurant, you know, back then as Jones, the two actors had a conversation that put it all out there for Carrey. And he told Howard Stern in 2014, he said, "I walk into a restaurant the night before our big scene in the Riddler's lair. I went up to say hi. The blood drained from his face in such a way that I realized that the reason why he was suffering from some kind of pain. He got up, kind of shaking, hugged me, and he whispered in my ear, I hate you. I really don't like you." I was like, "Wow, okay, well, what's going on, man?" He said, "I cannot sanction your buffoonery."
Love
and
it.
I can see Tommy Lee Jones story.
I've read that. I think that was in the Hollywood Reporter West. I remember reading that a couple years ago, and I was like, man, I could just see Tommy Lee Jones doing that. Like, it just makes so much sense. And honestly, after watching the movie, I can see totally why he would say that to Jim Carrey.
He was trying to out Jim Carrey, in that in the movie, and you can't do that.
All right.
Yeah.
Now we're finishing each other's sentences, best BFFs.
Yeah.
And then the last one was, you know, Schumacher in the studio had conflict on the cut of the film. And apparently, for you Batman Forever fans out there, there is an unreleased Schumacher cut of the film that is much longer. Apparently, there's a lot of fans have been clamoring for it. So, anyway, there's been discussion about releasing the Schumacher cut. So,
is it less than 4 hours and 2 minutes?
It is less than that.
God. Okay, good. The Schumacher cut.
I want the Schumacher cut. Get it at my house now.
Yeah, three hours of Jim Carrey doing his buffoonery.
So I want a cut that's 30 like minutes Carrey. Shorter, not longer.
Yeah, maybe maybe 2 hours shorter.
Yeah,
I'm going to make Luke's quote even better. Every movie I watched before I was 10 years old with Jim Carrey in it, I love.
That's also true. But I have notes on some of the scenes that they cut out, and one of them in particular we'll talk about when we get there. I don't know why they cut it out.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, audience, let's get into our walkthroughs that we do from time to time, especially on our Guilty Pleasures episode. There's going to be massive spoilers for this movie, so if you haven't seen Batman Forever, consider yourself lucky. Just keep it that way. And we'll be walking through this movie. We're going to throw out a handful of scenes at a time. We call those a sequence. And then our panel here, we're just going to talk about anything that sticks out. Okay, here we go. Is the honestly very cheesy opening credits that look very dated that start flying at the camera. The movie opens with Batman. He's getting ready to head out. And as Matt just said, he's going to go get drive-through. Two-Face Harvey, played by Tommy Lee Jones, has a hostage situation at a Gotham bank. Batman shows up and gets the scoop from Commissioner Gordon and also meets Dr. Chase Meridian, played by Nicole Kidman. Batman goes to fight Harvey's henchmen and ultimately saves the day, but Two-Face escapes. So, guys, let's go. What do we think about the opening of Batman Forever?
I'm going to jump in here first because you mentioned the dated 3D credits. Literally, I have a note that says this may have looked cool in 1995, but today I could teach you how to make credits that look better than that in about 15 minutes with Final Cut Pro. And between that and then there's a city shot. I think it may be a little bit further in the movie, but where like goes over Gotham and it looks like PlayStation 1 graphics. There's no detail on anything and it just looks freaking awful. So Those are my two big notes there. But then I have to mention Nicole Kidman. She's 28. The actress is 28. And she's like this revered psychologist. I'm like, I'm sorry. She would have graduated from medical school like 6 months ago. She wouldn't be like, you know, the lead psychiatrist investigator. I'm sure, Gabe, you know this. You work in this field. How many 28-year-old revered psychiatrists do you work with?
Absolutely zero. I mean, yeah, you must exactly. be some kind of protege.
Right. Can I say something real quick before everybody else goes? I don't get the Nicole Kidman character.
She does not.
Because Two-Face is literally in the middle of robbing this massive bank in downtown Gotham. He's killing people. He's got hostages. And the commissioner's like, you know what we need? We need a psychiatrist to come down here and psychoanalyze him for the commissioner and then tell Batman about him. What? Like, the whole character just blows my mind.
It doesn't make any sense. But I also want to ask about the character. So when you think in the script, does it say when you first see her and Batman's coming down, does it say Nicole Kidman's character have an orgasm as Batman's flying to her? Because that's what she's doing on the screen. Do y'all remember that scene? Like, she is literally like, can't control herself. It's wild.
But, well, that's how you introduce a character.
I love the quote. She says something to Batman. She's like, something about dressing up like a rodent. And he goes, bats aren't rodents. And she goes, my, you are interesting. Like, because he told you bats aren't rodents, you're like,
what?
That's what did it. Oh my gosh, you're so
that line is blowing a revered psychiatrist's brain. Bats aren't rodents? What?
Yeah.
Sure.
Also, hasn't he read her work? Doesn't that come up in this 5-second scene?
Right after. He's read all of her work.
All of her work.
All that's one paper that she could have written
in school.
Yeah.
I'd be amiss if we didn't talk about the badass underground lair that Batman has in this movie. So we've talked about my chickens, which is one thing Tommy told me to steer clear of. Now I'm going to talk about my car. If you guys don't know it, I drive a Chevy 1500 Express van with it's got a conversion top on it. It's one of those big giant vans that, you know, people drive on vacations, but I drive it all the time. Can you guys imagine so my favorite part about his underground lair is it has that suction cup thing that rotates and brings the Batmobile up to the surface. Like, how much money do you have to blow to create one of those suction cup things to bring the Batmobile up to the surface? But I'm telling you, if I get rich, I'm going to have one of those with my park creeper van that just brings it up to the surface. People are going to be like, what is it? And they're going to be like, oh, no,
take it back down.
Put it back down.
I thought we were talking about the bank robbery.
The bank robbery scene.
We are. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm not used to Gabe.
Sorry. I'm all over the place. Back to the bank robbery scene.
Back to the bank robbery. What, like, one thing that stuck out at me right off the top of this movie is, like, how over the top it is. Like, Tommy Lee Jones' character, he's, like laughing
hysterically. I like him here, though.
Even the security guard is, like, crying hysterically. Like, they're so loud and obnoxious right off the bat. I'm like, how is this good? How is this entertaining? Who is this for? Who is it entertaining? I can't tell at this point.
This first scene entertained me. I was still in at this first scene. Even now,
I was still in at this first scene.
I was like, Tommy Lee Jones is bringing it. All right, let's see where this is going.
Tommy Lee Jones brought it. We got a Nicole Kidman orgasm already. We got a safe that... It's not a question of strength. It's a question of weight ratios. There's zero chance that helicopter can hold it up, and there's zero chance that bat wire can hold it up. The odd that it falls back into the hole that it created is zero to none. It's simple calculus, idiots.
We find out later that Batman is a genius when it comes to measuring lines in real time. That comes in at the very end of the movie as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But I think we'll learn more about how he does that type of stuff in the Schumacher cut.
You're probably right.
It's all gonna make sense.
That little bat hook that he has, it goes through the marble wall, which, by the way, flexes like it's a piece of paper because it clearly is just a piece of paper. And that little hook holds that safe up. And how much does that safe weigh? I mean, it weighs 20 tons if it weighs an ounce. And not only that, all the safety deposit boxes somehow look perfectly normal, but are filled with boiling acid. And I wouldn't have done that if the guy didn't go, oh, no, boiling acid.
Well, I was going to say, I've got a common theme running, and it bothered me this time, and I've never even really thought about this before. But think of builders today. Like, it takes like 9 months for them to build a freaking house, all right? You got Bruce Wayne, you got Alfred. Nobody else is supposed to know he's Batman. How in the hell are they able to build all of these gadgets and vehicles and tunnels? Years. It would take years. I mean, Alfred would be dead. You know, Batman would be an old man himself just by the time they got some of this stuff done. But anyway, it just was cracking me up just thinking about him just even just making that bat car. It would take forever.
And what's up with that damn bat car? Like, what is its design? It's like 3D. I don't know. It looks awful, though.
I disagree. I like that bat car.
That was one of the best bat cars. No, it has got to be the worst bat car I've ever seen.
I love the lights. That bat car is awesome. It has that grid.
Like, it's like underneath. Got the lights. No. Okay. Well, tell me one good thing about that bat car.
Everything. It can drive up walls. It shoots out fire. Like,
I think, I don't know if Luke or Matt said this, but like, it just seems like this movie was made for like a 12-year-old. Like, it's like,
congratulations, I was 12 then.
That car looks like it was designed for a 12-year-old. They're like, what is a 12-year-old like? They like all that stuff.
Can you imagine him driving through a McDonald's in that? I bet that McDonald's worker like shit his pants. He was like, can I have a number two and fries? And then he pulls around to the window. He was like,
not that kind of number two. Well, whoever's behind him in the drive-thru, the hood has got scorch marks from the flame shooting out the back of the Batmobile.
Yeah, it blows up cars behind it.
The other thing, those fins are like 12 feet tall. That thing's not fitting through a drive-thru.
No way.
I was going to say, you asked how did Alfred and Batman build all that. You weren't paying attention when Dick Grayson shows up and he's looking at the motorcycles. Bruce Wayne says, Alfred is a master builder.
Oh,
you missed that. You must have missed that line.
I did.
I believe he said quite a mechanic.
Oh, well, whatever. Master.
He's also like 85 years old.
That is true. He is very old.
Well, the last thing I have before we get into our next sequence here is I always notice that, and it's not just this movie. I can't just fault Batman Forever, but in these movies like Batman Forever, every one of the freaking henchmen have all got to be dressed in the exact same outfits. You know, like, it's their uniform. Hey, you join Two-Face's gang. Well, you got to go out and you got to get 30, you know, piercings in your eyebrows and in your lips. And then you got to wear this this mask and, you know, you got to be shirtless. And, you know, anyway, it was just cracking me up. Every henchman is dressed the same.
I also want to ask, why is the combination on the inside of the safe? That's the one thing that you all talking about, the line not being able to hold the safe. Why is the combination on the inside? I don't know.
In case you get locked in with boiling acid. They were thinking ahead.
Obviously.
We'll get on to our next sequence here. And so up next, we head to Wayne Enterprises. We get a look at his electronics division. One of his employees, Edward Nigma, played by Jim Carrey, is obsessed with Bruce. He's desperate to meet him. And he shows him his brainwaves project, which includes the ability to manipulate them. Bruce is not down with that. He rejects Edward's proposal. Edwards channels the dark side and says he will make Bruce understand. Batman then responds to the bat signal, but to his surprise, Dr. Chase is the one who signaled him, I think, to just flirt with him, which the city commissioner is cool with. Using, you know, a warning, you know, signal or a help signal to flirt. Anyway, Edward then kills his boss Stickley and makes it look like suicide. And Bruce heads to Wayne Enterprises the next day to understand what's happened. And he finds, a riddle. So some plot elements are starting to unfold. What did you guys think about our second sequence?
Nicole Kidman's character here, her name is Chase. And that is what she's doing. Mm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. It's deep. Jim Carrey had the best 1994 of maybe it may be the best year of any actor ever had in the history of movies with The Mask, Ace Ventura, and Dumb and Dumber in the same year. when this came out, I was like, Jim Carrey and Batman, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And this first scene made me think, well, I guess 94 is the only good year he's going to have, because this is not a good performance. It's too over the top, and nobody would be that crazy. I'm sorry. Nobody's that crazy.
Man, that's what I was going to say. Like, just jumping in here about Jim Carrey is like, I think we've got to talk about Jim Carrey right now, because, like, what is this performance? It is it might be the most obnoxious movie performance I've ever seen in my life. Like, I hated every second of it. Everything he was doing. Was he doing Ace Ventura as the Riddler? Like, that's what I felt like he was. He was just like, I'm Ace Ventura now, but now I'm the Riddler now. Like, it was mind-blowingly awful. I never want to watch that performance again. Like, I almost hate Jim Carrey now.
I hate you, because I thought it was brave. I mean, how brave is it to be, you know, Ace Ventura and the Riddler at the same time? Man, I loved him. While he's on the screen, he sucks you into the screen.
Stop. You don't think that. Your 12-year-old thinks that. What did your now 37-year-old think?
I agree with what Matt said. I loved every movie Jim Carrey was in 1995. I thought he was the only actor in 94, I'm sorry. And then 1995 pops out, and I'm still 11, and I love this movie. I can quote every line he says. Don't try me. I can quote, like, the whole part. He's going to have to settle for the bronze. You know, I've seen this movie so many times. I love it, you know. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Tommy.
I can't even fathom this performance anymore. I can't do it. I don't want to look at it anymore. But also, on top of that, what was his big invention? Was it just 3D? Like, he just invented, like some VR. Shitty 3D.
It was like AR, VR or something. Yeah, shitty 3D.
It looks like a mixture between 3D glasses and the suck and cut off of Wayne's World.
It does. That's a good point. I only had two things here during this sequence. And so the first one, it was a deliberate effort by Joel Schumacher and the set designer to have all of these massive statues all over Gotham. You can see them in pretty much any shot of the city. It's literally like they have 20 Statue of Liberty sized statues randomly about the city.
Ridiculous.
And an actual Statue of Liberty.
Actual Statue of Liberty. Yes.
And then I was just trying to imagine, okay, think about the Gotham City Council. You know, they're always arguing with one another because they could be allowing, like, all these new business buildings to be built. You know, they have the downtown square footage for this or that. But no, they just keep putting statues up everywhere, you know, over half the city. So I just thought that was hilarious.
It's crazy, Wes. But don't worry, man. After last summer, they're all torn down.
Well, that's true.
You don't have to worry about those anymore.
Yeah, the statues are done.
You guys keep complaining about Jim Carrey's performance, and the thing is that you missed the scene where they're talking about the suicide with the cops. Are we on that, or is that the next sequence?
Yeah, no, that was in this.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is the funniest part of this movie, if you're paying attention. So Edward Nygma hands over the suicide note and says, "You'll find sentence structure and syntax match exactly," which means he's clever enough to cover his tracks. You get to see the actual text of the suicide note, and it's like a fax, and it says, "To whom it may concern, goodbye, cruel world." And Gordon reads it and goes, "Yep, it's suicide."
Going back on that, with the Riddler, why does Edward have to have Bruce's answer that second? You literally meet the boss of the company, billionaire Bruce Wayne. Bruce literally offers to set up a meeting with Edward to go through this invention. And Edward's like, "No, hell no. I've literally told you about my project for 30 seconds. I got to have an answer right this second, or I'm going to turn Gotham into brain dead zombies."
The answer is no. And I think that his problem, Wes, started like just right before that. It was a great pitch, but he should have left off the whole manipulating brainwaves part. Owners don't need to know how these things work. They don't care, just that they work and they're going to sell. You don't have to tell them about the manipulating brainwaves, right, Tommy? He's shaking.
Exactly, Gabe. Exactly. I still can't get over how bad that performance is, honestly, guys. I hated it more than I think I've ever hated a performance ever. And I'm not even joking. Like, I know it sounds like I'm trying to be funny. I'm not. Like, it was, I despise that performance. So I'm going to keep talking about that. Sorry.
Well, before we move on to the third sequence, again, you know, Bruce's office desk has this chute that opens up and he slides down. Like, who built that? Who? When did he have
time to come on, that? Wes? What are you talking about? He was like, "Hey, I need a mail tube right below me."
But you all are missing. It's like this whole elaborate thing, and the secret word is chair.
Chair.
Chair. Can you imagine the cleaning ladies like talking on the phone with somebody? Yeah, let me just move this chair out of the way and I'll find it. And bam, she just shoots down. Yeah. You know.
He's in the top of like the Wayne Tower. That goes all the way to the Batcave?
We know from the first one that Wayne Manor is literally in the middle of nowhere. It takes forever to get there. You know, you got that whole driving scene with Kim Basinger and him. So that is a long shoot. Who built it? When did they build it? How did they build it?
Guys, that's how he became a billionaire. Like, all this amazing construction he can do.
You all are talking, I mean, we'll get to it, I'm sure, but the Riddler has a pretty cool lair in Batman Forever, and he went from a nobody to the Riddler in like a week. How did they build that lair that's at the end of the movie in that time? Yeah, I mean, that
I had a note on that as well. Like, well, I just don't get where all this stuff's being built.
Let's save that one. That's a good one. That's a good one, Matt.
Yeah, we'll come back to that one because that one is critical.
We'll go into sequence number three. Edward drops off another riddle at Wayne Manor. Bruce goes to see Dr. Chase where he asks her out on a date. The date is to the circus where they'll watch the Flying Graysons do trapeze stunts. Two-Face shows up as the ringmaster, tells the audience he wants to know who Batman is. And they have 2 minutes or he's going to detonate a bomb. Chaos, of course, ensues. All of this is somehow still being broadcast live. Edward's watching from home, eating popcorn. The Flying Graysons intervene. Bruce is out on the circus floor beating people up. Dick Grayson, who's played by Chris O'Donnell, disposes of the bomb through the top of the tent and it rolls down into the ocean, exploding. However, Two-Face uses a machine gun to shoot down the rest of the Graysons, and they fall to their death. So we're getting pretty dramatic here and more action as the story's unfolded. What did you guys think about sequence three?
Sometimes when you read these, I just get excited. Like, just you reading that, like, I don't even think we have to say anything.
Well, I want to start in Chase Meridian's office. I don't know. He thinks that something bad is happening to her inside the police station, so he breaks down her door.
which, by the way, should weigh more than it looks like it weighs.
What kind of office does she have? That thing is huge. Number two, he walks over to a picture she has on the wall and says, "You got a thing for bats?" And she responds with, "No, that's a Rorschach test. The question is, do you have a thing for bats?" And if I was him, I would have turned around and said, "No, whoever sold you that is wrong. That is a photorealistic representation of a bat."
It's so freaking obvious it's a bat.
Did you say it was Chris O'Donnell that was Robin? Because I thought it was Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20.
Pretty similar.
Looks exactly like him.
That's great.
It did look just like him.
Well, I love how that Bruce takes easily the most beautiful girl in the entire city on a date, and he picks the circus for the first date. You know, imagine Chase like telling her friends, "Hey, girls, hey, I'm going on this date with a billionaire, Bruce Wayne," and they're like, "Oh yeah, where is he going to take you?" Well, I mean, we're going to the circus. It just cracks me up just thinking about that.
Nobody Bruce goes likes to tearing things up. Bruce has that "I don't give a shit" money. You know, when you got that type of money, you can take her anywhere.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the only thing that bugs me is the way he says circus. I don't like the way that Val Kilmer says circus in this movie. I almost can't stand it. I'm sorry, Val, if you're listening. I'm sure you are.
Are you telling me you have an issue with Val Kilmer saying the word circus, but you don't have an issue with Jim Carrey doing whatever the hell he's doing?
Because he's awesome.
Every scene? Every sentence?
Look, my 10-year-old me can't get past the fact that I used to think he was awesome. I can't. I don't know what it is. We've talked about Ace Ventura on here, even in a decade I wasn't supposed to, under parameters I wasn't supposed to. I can't help it but love him. But what I will say is, how does Nicole Kidman not know that Val Kilmer's Batman?
Like, oh, gosh, Gabe, like, yes. Like, that is my other running thing that, like, I have for this episode.
I'm gonna tack on to Matt's thing. Like, she has become the most accomplished psychiatrist in improbable amount of time. But when you're in love with this bat and the guy beside you at the circus is screaming out loud, I'm Batman, it's who he is. There's several other cues that are going to come up throughout this movie.
Well, there's one right after that. He literally runs out onto the circus floor and starts kicking all of the henchmen's asses with ease in front of half of Gotham's elites.
And poor Nicole Kidman still sitting there like, man, I wish I knew who Batman was.
How wasn't that a bigger deal? You got the billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne just beating up people like
everybody. Right.
And that would have been all over the news, I guess.
Remember, it was being broadcast on TV. Thousands of people are watching it.
That would be like, we're watching, like,
Bruce Wayne, or is Bruce Wayne Batman?
You know, that would be like, Super Bowl. It gets taken over by Bane from Batman, and Elon Musk comes out there, and he's, like, kicking ass, like, at halftime. It's like, whoa, Elon Musk can fight.
I knew he was Batman.
He rolls in one of his Teslas and just gets out and starts whooping ass.
He's also Iron Man. Elon Musk is busy. And his boring company is the one who did the bat tunnel from the tower to the cave, I think.
There you go.
So there's the answer
there
to
you
that.
Go.
But what about the movie trope where the bomb that actually looks like a cartoon bomb and it has a countdown on it and giant LCD letters and or numbers, and it says like 12 seconds left, and then Dick Grayson's carrying it up, and then that goes back to Batman fighting, and like 30 seconds later it comes back, and then now it's like 8 seconds left.
I have a question about that too, because Two-Face says that is 200 sticks of TNT. Why would you use TNT if you weren't going to show the TNT? Isn't that the whole point?
Just use C4.
Oh, it could have been any explosive. Why would you say TNT if you don't have like the representation of never mind.
Or the construction of the tent.
Because it's a tent, right? But it also looks like it's a manhole that he opens and there's a road going over top of it.
Luke just uncovered a plot hole bigger than that cliff in Jurassic Park.
Well, and why is the tent also like 20 feet, like the top of the tent is 20 feet above Gotham Harbor? Where the heck is the circus?
On the harbor.
It's under the harbor.
That's an underground layer.
I wish that Mortal Kombat boat would have just like floated up beside of it while he was out there throwing the bomb.
Man. I think it was the same harbor.
It could have been.
Everybody was welding, remember?
Yeah. They're all out.
After the death of his parents, Dick goes to stay with Bruce and Alfred, and while at Wayne Manor, although he resists at first, Bruce starts having flashbacks from his childhood, which were brought on by the Flying Grayson's deaths. Dick tells Alfred the story of how he flew in like a robin to save his brother once during a fall. Batman has another short encounter with Two-Face where Two-Face tries to fire a rocket launcher into the Batmobile. Edward is inspired by Two-Face after watching this whole thing live on TV. He wants to become a villain himself, and the first thing he's got to do, of course, is work on outfits. Back at Two-Face's hideout, he complains about not being able to kill Batman. Suddenly, Edward shows up, introducing himself as the Riddler. He shows Two-Face the box invention and proposes a plan to find out who Batman is. What did you guys think of the Robin subplot and the introduction of Edward as the Riddler?
Why is Robin living with Batman? Like, his parents die and they're like, Batman, you take this young kid. He's like, he's 25 if he's a day. And second off, the busy billionaire, like he's got time
like
to raise a kid.
Older than Robin.
Right. It's like, why is he staying with Batman or Bruce Wayne?
Doesn't make any sense. The other question is, who the hell does laundry like that?
Dang it.
Like,
yes.
What's going on with some karate laundry? Like, guys, I'm getting rid of my washer and dryer. I don't need it anymore. I'm just going to start drying my laundry that way. Karate kicking it in the air, and apparently that dries it. So what do y'all think of that idea?
Well, Team Man, you already have been working on the air punching and stuff like this. This is just the next evolution of that. You just start moving it into all facets of your life. Laundry next. Save your electricity.
But my issue with that is, like, he's doing this, like, showing off for Alfred, and Alfred just sitting there watching him, you know, wring the water out all over the floor, and then he just leaves a wet floor. You know, Alfred's going to clean up. No, yeah. Alfred's going to clean it. The old 80-year-old man's going to have to clean up because dumbass over here won't use a dryer.
It is truly ridiculous.
You know what, like, would have been awesome if at the end of that scene it's just Alfred smacking him in the side of the head. He was just like,
yes, that would have been perfect.
What would have been perfect for them to edit out that scene? Because it doesn't make any damn sense.
But even so, the next scene when he finds the secret room, it's like, dude, you had more than enough time to walk down the steps and catch that door. We didn't need you doing acrobats across, like, grabbing the tapestries on the wall and, you know.
I want to go back to when he first got to Wayne Manor and Commissioner Gordon leaves and he goes, I'm out of here. I don't need your charity. And Bruce Wayne turns to him and goes, what if I offer you charity in the form of gas? And he goes, all right, yeah, I'll take some of that.
Okay. All right, if you just rename it, I'll take it.
Right.
Now, the next scene, I think, goes into the car chase. And I feel like the car chase was very similar to, like, the Tim Burton version. Like, they had the old 50s cars. But isn't this the scene where he, like, somehow, like, gets up on the side part of the – like, it goes up the building.
Yeah, he shoots a grappling hook from the front of the car up to the top of the building, and then he gets up. But my question is, at the end of that, like, because they're all like, oh, we can't do anything now. But, I mean, how did he get to the top of the building? Even if he shot a grappling hook up, like, what happened?
That's where that car is now.
it's just still sitting there. It's like still on top of that building.
I have a little bit of background on that scene. Apparently, that is a Joel Schumacher inspired vision. He had a vision of the Batmobile driving up a wall, and they filmed it and put it in the movie without anything else around it to explain it.
That's a good studio, whenever Schumacher has one of these visions, do not film it.
Right.
That is an awful scene. And then the next scene, doesn't it go into, like, where Riddler and Two-Face are, like, finally meeting head-to-head, mano-a-mano, man-to-man?
There's the good and the bad dinner and the good and the bad girl. Like,
Drew Barrymore, shout-out to her, is in it.
Yeah.
Again, that room is pointless. Does he just stand in the middle of it all time so, like, his good side's on the white side? Like, if he took one step in either direction, the room doesn't make sense anymore.
I don't know. And then literally, man, this goes to your point, I think. Literally the next scene, then he has his, like, fortress. He just all of a sudden has this, like, multi-billion-dollar fortress somehow in the middle of, like, is that a lake or an ocean? I don't know. It's right off Metropolis. I don't know. Like, he had to have a hell of a real estate agent to get that property.
And how do these people in Gotham not know something's happening to them? Are they not looking out of their windows being like, it's kind of strange. I love this 3D TV, but this green glow that's escaping my window to this secret overground layer, in the middle of the ocean.
Well, to your point, Gabe, you know in Gotham, they've had some villains. They've had some supervillains they've had to deal with. So you got this, like, huge fortress being built. Like, couldn't somebody be like, hey, that's probably going to be a supervillain's lair?
It really wouldn't be too bad to be Two-Face aside from, like, one half of him looks like a smashed up, you know, Barney or something. But, you know, he's there in the middle. He's got two girls. He's got two dinners. He's got two drinks coming at him all the time. I mean, you know, think about that. It wouldn't be so bad to be Two-Face.
I wouldn't want any revenge. Just keep living that life. Like, there's no point for anger. No, I didn't. Did you?
No, it was something like the bad side was like raw.
Baby quail eggs.
It's a blackened heart.
Yeah, it was like the grossest sounding food I've ever heard. I should have written it down.
on the nice side, it was like baby quail eggs and like a.
I thought you knew the whole movie, Gabe.
I don't know. I know every Jim Carrey line, not the movie, because I love the Jim Carrey performance. That's why me and T-Man are going to talk about that off air.
Well, Two-Face is supposed to be crippled by the inability to make a decision. Mm-hmm. That's not what this character does. This character always wants to do the bad thing and just waits until the coin tells him to.
Right.
So
not true to the comic character.
I have an actual real question. Do you think that this character was ruined by the movie or the actor? Like, because
it's the writing.
Definitely.
Yeah, the right. To your point, you don't really even understand Two-Face's character at all, like what he's doing. Like, it's just like, I don't even understand what he's flipping the coin for. Like, is that just when he's going to go shoot people, I guess, basically?
Permission.
Yeah, so not very well described.
Two-Face and the Riddler, they start teaming up. They're causing mayhem around Gotham, first by robbing a jewelry store, which is covered by the news. Alfred brings Bruce a third riddle. And they briefly try to figure it out what the three riddles have in common. Dick is snooping around Wayne Manor, wanting to know why one of the doors is locked. Edward has now started a company called Nigmatech, where he unveils the box to the press. Next, we find out from a newscast the 3D box is a massive hit amongst Gotham, and nearly every home has one. And then Dick discovers the Batcave. So we're at the point in the movie where the Riddler really starts to take over as the main villain. The Robin subplot is really developing. What do you guys have here?
My favorite scene in the movie is the jewelry store robbery because of the huge mistake that's in it. Did any of you all catch it? Anybody?
No.
I can tell by the look on your faces. Not. The Riddler smashes a case and he pulls out this massive diamond and he holds it up. And then the camera cuts to Two-Face. And he goes, that's not a good diamond. And then it cuts back to Jim Carrey. And now he's holding a diamond that's like this big. And Tommy Lee Jones grabs it from him and then picks up the big diamond he literally was just holding and hands it back to him. if seriously, look up that scene. It's clearly a mess up. But that's my favorite scene in the movie. I rewound it, watched it like four times.
Well, it's obviously no one gave an F about what they were doing this movie. So they probably didn't care about leaving that in there either.
No, not at all. Plus, you've got Batman has the Dick Tracy watch. I didn't realize that.
That's just an Apple Watch, man. That thing's awesome. Dick, well, I did enjoy the Teach Me How to Punch a Guy. That was fun.
I did like that one. And
Dick breaks into the Batcave. And the intruder alert goes off. All the lights come on. The Bat computer lights up. Intruder alert. Intruder alert. The Batmobile's coming up out of the ground. Wouldn't you want to keep it dark and maybe not reveal all of the Batman stuff if the intruder alarm is going off?
Yeah. For the intruder's here. Let's bring the Batmobile into the room. Right. Let's bring
it happens again later with the Riddler, too. So.
Oh, man. Here's another thing that I love about the Batcave. Why on earth did they build it so dangerous? There is not one freaking handrail anywhere. And, I mean, those are massive drops, right? I mean, we're talking 50, 75, 100 foot. Alfred's 85 years old having to navigate this maze. Why can Batman build this chute in these cars and these airplanes and these boats, but he can't build a freaking handrail?
Okay, listen. Cool. Wayne is a businessman. He has to deal with OSHA all the time. The one place OSHA never comes is the Batcave. All right?
That's probably there you it.
Go. Yeah, but he's like, all right.
What about the Batwing? When it flies out, it goes through, like, the skinniest thing, and he has to, like, maneuver through these, like, stalactites. Like, dude, clear out the cave so you could at least fly straight out, you know?
Such an inconvenience.
It really is.
He made that Batcave super dangerous for him and Alfred, even though they're really supposed to only be the two people down there. So Bruce is hanging out with Chase, where more of his suppressed memories come out. She starts to psychoanalyze them. Alfred contacts Bruce to let him know that Dick has taken the Batmobile. Dick is cruising around Gotham trying to pick up girls whenever he sees a girl being harassed by the Light Bright gang. He goes to save her with this elaborate fight with these guys. Dick is overmatched as badly as Raph was against the Foot Clan in the original Turtles. but Batman shows up to save Dick. They argue back at the Batcave about Dick becoming his partner. Then at the Ritz Gotham, Edward is hosting a huge party with the Gotham elite to celebrate the 3D box. Bruce shows up with Chase, where ultimately he's tricked into getting his brain waves manipulated. Two-Face shows up again and overtakes the party. Bruce changes into Batman, where he battles Two-Face's gang. Chase tells Batman to come to her place tonight at midnight very seductively. Two-Face and his gang have Batman pretty much beat, but Dick shows up dressed in the Flying Grayson's outfit and saves him. This sounds like a whole bunch of stuff, but it's literally just three scenes. So we got more elaborate action scenes, not a lot of plot here, just a lot of eye candy. What did you think about all these different fight scenes?
I can't stand anything Chris O'Donnell does or says in this movie. Like I won't go down the Jim Carrey route with you, but I cannot stand Chris O'Donnell in this movie.
Well, my first thought was, oh, I didn't realize that Batgirl was in this movie, because I was convinced that that was Alicia Silverstone that he saved.
It looks like her.
It looked exactly like her.
What are they actually doing to her? I mean, I'm watching this and they are menacing her. But I can't understand what their goal is. I mean, they're not actually assaulting her or hurting her or even doing anything, you know, really bad. They're just menacing. What are they doing?
It's well, like a haunted house. They were about, where they just,
yeah. It is. Yeah, as far as what they're doing and what they look like is exactly a haunted house.
And the Batmobile rolls up and their leader goes, "Chill, dudes. It's Batman."
But if you remember, they're taking her. Here's the thing, guys. Come on, guys. They're taking her into the building. They were going to do some bad stuff.
Okay.
Still out in public. They were getting her. So it's a PG-13 movie. They had to.
They were going to rape her. They were going to make her like file her taxes, right?
No.
That's not it.
No, they're going to go do much worse. But Robin came and saved her. But it's still really stupid because it does just look really dumb, like the whole thing. And the whole, like, night glow stick thing, it's just, like I said, this movie is, like, it's all, there's no, like, quality to it or no, like, substance to it. It's all just, like, images, but none of them, they're not even any good.
They all look like the inside of a laser tag place. Everything is like neon lights, like glow lights.
That is a perfect. I think
that's the difference. Yeah, that's the difference between Schumacher and Burton, where Burton is also a very stylized director, but it's so interesting and so good. You love it. Where Schumacher is just like a poor man's Tim Burton in a lot of ways.
Yeah, see, I mean, he creates, Tim Burton creates like actual environments you want to be in, but Schumacher just, I mean, it looked like a rave. I don't know. Like, even the Two-Face, like, goons had, like, glow sticks on. The guns had glow sticks on them. I was like, how did they get those machine gun glow sticks?
Hey, well, I like the neon. I wish they had stuck with the neon instead of the day glow. I don't know why they changed from neon to day glow for that one scene.
Even Edward Nygma's lair had, like, 3D glow lights, like, that were shooting. Can you imagine them hanging out in that lair when nothing was going on? They're just like sitting there and those glow lights are hitting the side of their face. They're like, well, what do you want to do now, Two-Face? I don't know. I got to call my wife. God, can you turn off these glow lights?
Turn it off. Just for a little bit.
Well, it also goes back to what you're saying with all those statues. Like, that's another Schumacher idea, but it's like they were trying to replicate Tim Burton in a way, but they just did everything. Damn. Yeah, they failed in all those aspects. Like, it just doesn't work. None of it works.
Tim Burton, like, on Special K or something like that. Just, get, you know, take some ketamine, get into the rave. Just, all you want to see is bright lights and I guess, apparently, large statues everywhere. I mean, feel like he's on, like, some kind of club drug.
It's like Tim Burton on club. It's like, you know, you go to the grocery store and you're getting cereal. You know, Tim Burton is like the box cereal. Schumacher, remember they had just the plastic paper cereal? Wasn't even in the box. It was like Fruit Loops was called, like, you know, what was some cheap ass name of it?
That's Sugar O's or something.
Sweet Rings.
Sweet Rings.
Sweet Rings. Exactly.
That's Joel Schumacher.
Sweet Rings.
But you all missed the part talking about when Alfred calls Batman. He's like, sir, Dick has taken the car. And Batman's like, the Bentley? He's like, no, the other car. And then he keeps naming off cars that are clearly not the Batmobile. But it's like, come on, Batman, or he would totally pick up on that, what Alfred was throwing down. He was being other pretty car. Obvious.
The other car.
Yeah, for being a genius, doesn't
the other car. Fast.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I'll say about this scene is that, you know, Batman has somehow constructed this suit that just allows him just to dive off buildings and land safely on the ground. However, what is his plan whenever he's going to jump down into this manhole? Because if you notice, he literally tucks his arms in after falling, you know, 30 floors to make himself more aerodynamic to go into a manhole. Like,
Wes, I got it right there. Yeah, to fall 300 feet and literally just die. Because there was nothing else for him to do. He was just falling. He's like, well, guys, this is it. I'm dead now. I think it was a suicide attempt. Had to be.
And if you look at it that way, Two-Face was a hero because they saved him.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yes. But you're right. I thought of that, too. I was like, what was he planning right there? What about, but also this is a scene where he becomes like invulnerable to fire. Like he's got that fire cape.
Fire cape. Yeah. I love that.
And not just fire, a bombs fire.
Bombs fire cape. Wow.
Well, I can almost get behind the fact that he like, you know, puts the thing over him and he can withstand it. But then he like just stands up and walks out of it while it's still going on. So it's like, did you even need to duck down?
Yeah. He's like, you know, he was like, all right, I'm tired of this. Now I'm just going to walk through the fire.
In sequence number 7, we've got Bruce and Dick arguing about being partners. Bruce confesses his love for Chase, but knows that she wants Batman. Alfred says to let the lady decide. So Batman shows up at Chase's where she rejects him. The Riddler, he shows Two-Face that Bruce Wayne is Batman. He says, you know, who would have bats on the brain? Bruce decides out of nowhere, apparently, that Batman's done. And he's going to invite Chase over to tell her the truth. Bruce has more flashbacks while talking with Chase. Just as he's about to tell her the truth, she kisses him. And after all of this time and all of these signals and all of the warning that this is Batman, it takes the kiss. And then she's like, oh, he kisses just like Batman. That's got to be Batman. All of a sudden, the Riddler and Two-Face bust into Wayne Manor, knock out Alfred, knock out Bruce, destroy the Batcave, kidnap Chase, and leave a fourth riddle. This is not really a long sequence here, but there's just lots of stuff that are unfolding. What did you guys think about? This is pretty much the setup for the climax of the film.
I mean, T-Man stole my laundry scene joke, so I'm going to get this one out there real quick. So I don't read off my notes very often. Do you guys think that Chase Meridian wanted to see if there was a bat penis to go with the bat nipples?
Potentially.
Hold on. That's my note number one. Note number two. Let me try. That didn't land as good as I thought it was. What if the person – this one's not going to land either. Never mind. Let's go back to Tommy.
Well, no, what I was going to say, Gabe, you bring – because I was having some not as strange thoughts as that, but some similar ones, because my favorite part of this whole sequence is Chase giving Batman blue balls. Just think if Chase wasn't really into Bruce – and still rejected Batman. He would have gotten all dressed up. He would have drove to town. He would have climbed up to the top of the building just to get teased and rejected. And then he would be out fighting villains all sexually frustrated. I was just cracking up at that.
Plus, come there to reject him. And he can't even fight villains anymore because he's given up Batman. So
that's true. He would have just went home and been sexually frustrated at the dangerous Batcave.
Fine, I'll read my second note, because the whole thing that she says is she says I've met someone, and so Batman walks away and he does this shit-eating grin. He's like,
oh yeah, the grin.
When he's out the door, and I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, what if it isn't Bruce Wayne? What if it's not Batman? What if it's not Bruce Wayne? What if it's Tim that works at the local Taco Bell that she met? Like, what if
he has been going to Taco Bell a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he gets dropped through.
Anyway. I want to know why she invited him to her room and then immediately fell asleep. I mean, midnight is not that late.
Hey, come up to my room. I'm going to go to bed.
The other thing, Gabe, she is definitely interested in his over underwear. that is definitely the case. The other thing about this scene is Batman should never smile with the bat suit on. That is creepy.
No,
it doesn't work.
Got frightened there. You're like, whoa, this took a scary turn.
What? It's like when you see people with angry eyes and a smiling face. It like creeps you out. Like you can't have that.
Then you start realizing that he's a grown man dressing as a bat. And you're like, oh, this guy's a freak.
Where was it going to go in the bedroom? Was he going to, like, leave his bat hat on and, like, take off his bat pants? Like, what was going to happen here?
First off, he's into, like, some BDSM with all that leather and stuff. So he's got all the tools. He's ready to go.
Well, T-Man, I love that you're talking about, you know, Batman, you know, being a freak. Because where did Bruce get that glamour video of Chase? Like, you know, she's on the sidewalk and in slow motion sweeping her hair to the side. I mean, Bruce is in full-fledged stalker territory right here.
He's been watching some erotic thrillers like we talked about, because he hired a private detective to track her down, get into her sex life, really find out all the nitty-gritty stuff.
You know, it's just Alfred.
It's totally Alfred.
I knew it.
Alfred's like, do I got to go stop your women again? He's like, yes, you do.
And fix the car, too.
Except the car and build me my underground lair
and work on that second chair chute.
I've got to talk a little bit more also about the Riddler. This whole scene of him underground doing all those moves and the bombs and stuff, it's just disgusting. Like that scene, his performance is truly awful. I'm sorry, guys.
Before we get there, the flashbacks that Bruce had while talking to Dr. Chase. This is part that was cut out. This is the one scene that I know that was cut out. You're following young Bruce. This is in the movie. You're following young Bruce through the house, and he finds this notebook that his dad wrote in every day. And in the beginning of the movie, they mention how his dad wrote in this journal every single day. And the plot point that they cut out is Bruce goes on the day of the funeral and reads the last entry of the book. And the last entry of the book is, me and Martha really want to stay home tonight, but Bruce really wants to go see this stupid cartoon. So Bruce reads that, realizes that he is the reason his parents have died, and runs out of the house, you know, distraught, and falls into the Batcave. Why did they cut that out? That's a good part of the movie.
It was probably too dark for what
that could have been.
But I think
it made no sense. They kept showing the book. Like, why did they cut that out?
I was actually so confused what was happening that whole thing. Like, what does this book have to do
with it? I'm glad you said that. Like, I actually, maybe I'm so stupid. Like, I forgot. I was like, it's irrelevant. They didn't show it.
I really bet the studio was like, this is too dark. Because that's the whole thing of the movie. But they probably should have left it in. Though, at the same time, like, it almost wouldn't have fit with the movie. Because the movie is so, like, campy. So that's an interesting scene there.
Well, it's like the fulfillment of the starting of Batman's origin story that the first two movies got into. It completes the circuit.
Well, and also, that's a good point. Man. I also didn't really understand, like, what the point of any of those flashbacks really were. Like, what were they going for? Why did they have those in there?
I think they were ripping off the original where Tim Burton, you know, did those, you know, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? It's like they were trying to stay in the same vein, but.
Talk about the riddles. Are we there?
Go for it.
Yeah,
go
please.
For it.
I mean, I don't remember all of them, but there's four or five riddles. And as a 13-year-old in the theater, I figured them out in real time before Batman did, which makes me think the Riddler's not that smart. Like the, you know, you can find us all in a tennis court, five of a sword or whatever. It's like A-E-I-O-U, it's vowels. Then at the end, when they have to put them all together, they come to the conclusion way too quick. They're like, maybe if we convert the numbers to letters and if we flip them this way and we do that and this, and it spells Enigma, Edward Enigma must be the Riddler. And they come to it in like 15 seconds.
Exactly like Nick Cage solves everything in the National Treasure movies.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like they're just doing it off top. And they also do this in the X-Files, which I love the X-Files, but Mulder and Scully always do this too. It's like they just come up with all this stuff really fast. And like, oh, that's it, by the way. It's like, wait a minute.
I believe Jeff Goldblum did something similar in Independence Day. That's how he got to a virus.
Oh, yeah.
To
give him a virus.
Yeah, it's a direct takeoff of Batman 66 with Adam West. That's what they would do all the time to solve the riddles. You know, it's word association.
Well, the last thing I want to say on this one is just that the Riddler and Two-Face, they had those henchmen hanging off the side of the car all the way from the city, all the way out to Wayne Manor, which we've established is the middle of nowhere. So that cracks me up. Then they get inside, they have Bruce dead to rights, and they're just, we'll just let him live because he won't learn nothing. The whole movie has been about Two-Face killing Batman. They literally have him dead. It's just awful writing. Like, why couldn't have Bruce have fallen into the damn cave or something and they couldn't find where he was, and but he still survived? That was just...
They shot him in the head.
Yeah, it just like, skimmed him, knocked him out, and they were going to shoot him in the head again, but they just don't and just leave. Hey, well, we'll let him live to fight another day. No problem.
I do want to know why there are no cameras at Wayne Manor. None. Edward Nigma goes, tapes the first riddle to his bars, to the gate, and then the Riddler and Two-Face are watching trick-or-treaters go in and out for some reason. No cameras.
And honestly, how many trick-or-treaters are going to Wayne Manor? The logistics are just, like, I mean, that's not on your trick-or-treat trail. Like, they better be getting out, giving out 7 whole Snickers because you had to walk, like, 9 miles. Like, that's not a thing. Like, no trick-or-treaters are going to Wayne Manor. And I will say, Tommy, this is just to appease Tommy, where they went over the top is where the Riddler went over the top is these underground lair scenes where he's air humping, the baseball scene. What the heck are these sound effects when he throws the little green bouncy bats?
It's basically unwatchable, that scene. I'm not
just
like
a joygasm.
Truly awful stuff.
He talks about introducing a tamed animal into the wild.
I just want to know, like, in all honesty, was like the studio watching these scenes and being like, this is good? Or were they horrified?
I don't know if it was this scene or not, but at a certain point, Jim Carrey looks directly into the camera and says, is this too much? I can never tell. Yeah. And I don't think he's in character when he says that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're down to our final two sequences, and we can start wrapping this thing up, but Alfred wakes up Bruce and lets him know what happened. The Riddler unveils his glow jacket to Chase and says he's counting on Batman showing up. Alfred and Bruce figure out the riddle and know the Riddler is Edward. Dick shows up dressed in a new outfit. He goes by Robin now. They go by air and land to rescue Chase and stop the Riddler and Two-Face. As they try to get to Edward's lair, Two-Face and Riddler are playing a battleship, a real-life battleship game. They blow up the Batboat. Batman saves Robin under the water, and then they arrive on this apparently metal island. I even had trouble getting this sequence out. It's just all so ludicrous, but it's the climax of the film. What did you guys think about this?
That battleship scene, I don't have words for that.
I think you said it. It's all so ludicrous, it's even hard to talk about at this point.
Well, again,
the Riddler turned into Zool from Ghostbusters.
I said that. I wrote that down.
I had that written down. He did. It was a big Ghostbusters ripoff.
He even
said, I am a god.
Yeah. It was just a huge Ghostbusters ripoff. You guys are absolutely right.
I had it written down, too.
Man, look, great minds think alike. Gabe, you can hang out with me and Wes again.
The other thing I'd like to mention here is Batman just killed a bunch of scuba divers because he wrapped them up in a net and then tied them to a buoy. They're going to run out of air, and that's not going to be good.
And in a bad way. He didn't kill them in a humane way either. That's horrible.
The other thing is the worst line in the movie. Holy rusted metal, Batman, and Batman said, huh? And Robin says, this island, it's made of metal, and there are holes in it. And Batman goes, oh.
Never comes up again. I mean, at this point, I don't even know what to say to you. I got to the point of watching this movie at this point. It's like an hour or an hour and 45 minutes in. I'm just like, my brain is just numb.
Well, here's I watched it. And I don't remember what happens at the end. And I watched it 4 days ago. So.
Well, the Riddler's hair changes length literally in every scene.
It sure does. Color.
It does. It literally changes in length. He's got the real short, like, flat top. And then all of a sudden when he becomes Zool and Gozer, you know, he's got this huge long hair everywhere. And
that's the white devil haircut from Ace Ventura.
It's just hilarious, man. Oh, gosh. Well, let's go ahead. And, I mean, this all runs into the last sequence. So let's just go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. But Robin fights Two-Face and, taking Bruce's advice, decides not to kill him, which proves to be a mistake as Two-Face immediately captures him. Now both Chase and Robin are in these test tube things over the top of this huge hole that's in the middle of the lair. Batman gives the Riddler a riddle. Whoa. And then destroys this big brainwave machine. Then he confuses Two-Face by throwing up a bunch of coins, causing Two-Face to die, falling to his death. T-Man just literally laid over on the couch. The Riddler, in a last-ditch effort, releases the test tubes, causing Chase and Robin to start falling to their death. But never fear, audience. Batman saves both of them. Chase goes to Arkham Asylum as Edward says he knows who Batman is and they want to make sure that Batman's secret doesn't get out, although all of Gotham should know at this point. Edward says he's Batman. Chase tells Bruce that his secret is safe, and Batman resumes his crusade with Robin as his partner. We did it. We made it to the end of the movie. What did you guys think of the end of Batman Forever?
Not much.
I love it when the climax is a game show. Also, Robin came on the screen with a death drop, and he ended the movie with a death drop. Anybody?
Oh, okay. No. I see. It came full circle.
All right.
Movie ends with one heck of a coin trick. I'll just stop.
I don't. And one thing I don't understand is, like, the whole thing is Batman just throws his, like, whatever it is, star thing at the thing at the top, and it explodes, and that, like, destroys everything. Riddler's head morphs into some creature. Like, what is happening? Does anybody know?
That was my note. I said, what the F happened to the Riddler anyway? Why did those ghost things start attacking his head? And it turned him into Lemony Snicket's.
Yeah, Lemony Snicket then. I don't know. I thought it was more the Elephant Man, personally.
So in my headcanon, the giant blender that Batman hits with his Batarang is some sort of regulator for all of the brainwaves of Gotham. So with that gone, it... You know, it just floods his brain with too much. It's too much brainwave.
Yeah, makes sense.
With it normal, he has the voice of Gozer. With it broken, he just turns into Lemony Snicket.
Mashed potato head. Yeah.
Yes. Or the ballerina from Ace Ventura. When you're just sitting there going, yeah.
I will say this. As beautiful as Nicole Kidman is the entire movie, When she strolls up in that red dress and that red lipstick and that blonde glowing hair, I start feeling like Gabe does on Shark Week.
Yeah. You did yourself a little Christopher Nolan bump.
Good for you.
I have questions about the lines that Batman has in these guns or batarangs, whatever they are. He is, of course, as we've already discussed with the safe, a master of measuring distances while falling in real time, because he does it twice in this fall to save Chase Meridian and, Robin. Very impressive with Robin because he's only got inches to spare. Honestly, don't know why he doesn't just set him down at the bottom instead of pulling him back up to the top.
Maybe there wasn't a way out.
Could be that
big hole. Yeah,
sure.
You just been stuck down there. to wrap everything up, we're going to – I think the audience knows by now, because we've probably been harder on this movie than any movie that we've ever done before. But in our Guilty Pleasure series fashion, let's go around to the panel and you guys give us your final thoughts and let the audience know, is this a good movie? Is it a bad movie? Or is it a guilty pleasure? And Gabe, this was your choice, so kick us off.
Luke and Matt, thanks for coming on the show for me. Luke, you absolutely killed it. Your line was better than mine. My favorite line of the movie was, I'll see you in hell. And then the guy comes back and says, I'd rather see you in jail. I love it when you can rhyme your combat. When you can rhyme your comeback, like, that's awesome. But now, for me, guys, I said it. I mean, just like Luke said, I was 10. This is a guilty pleasure. I love this movie. Like, and it, you know, it's just a pleasure to watch. It's hard to watch as an adult and as a film critic who actually likes films, but I liked it so much when I was a kid that it's hard for me not to like.
All right. Gabe says guilty pleasure. Luke, what you got?
I am a huge Robin fan, and honestly, it probably started with this movie. I watched this movie twice to review for this show. And when I say I watched it twice, I mean, I watched it once and then I put it on again and I couldn't bring myself to actually watch it. This is not a good movie. However, when I think about it, it makes me smile a whole lot. A lot of the scenes are fun. I like a lot of the scenes, but I don't know if I can actually sit down and watch this movie ever again. I guess that makes it not a good movie, but I still enjoy thinking about it, whatever that is.
Okay. All right, Matt.
I feel kind of like Luke does. Loved it when I was a kid, watched it, and just complained the whole time about how horrible it was. But it would be a movie that if the five of us were in a room, I would totally watch it again, drinking whatever Gabe's drinking over there. And I can't tell if that's root beer or Budweiser.
It's one Budweiser. It gets me in the mood to podcast.
Nice. So I think it is a really bad movie, and I will never watch it again alone. But I would watch it with a group of friends and maybe drink a Budweiser while watching it. I think we'd have fun yelling at the screen. So it's not a guilty pleasure, but I would watch it with a group of friends.
Gotcha. Well, it's nice to know that Gabe has to drink to podcast with us. T-Man, what do you got for this movie?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, I've kind of talked a lot about it already, so I'm not going to say much. I'm not even going to say anything other than this one sentence. From now on, I'm just going to call this movie Batman, I Hope I Never Have to Watch You Again Forever.
Oh, nice.
So T-Man says it's a bad movie, and I don't really have a lot to say either to wrap it up. I will just say this. It's like watching like a train wreck or a car crash. It's not pleasurable to watch it, but for whatever reason, it's not even so bad it's good. It's just so bad, but I don't know. It still has this weird thing. It's like I wasn't bored while I watched it. Like, it wasn't boring.
No.
So if it's not boring, I guess I was entertained.
Which makes it.
But I didn't get pleasure out of watching it either. It's such a weird thing. So
well, why did you want to continue watching it if you weren't getting?
Well, because it was entertaining me. I was just like, I smelled.
Jump on my train. Come on, like, Wes. Do thing. It.
I was just kind of watching it like this. The audience can't see me, but I've got to say it's a bad movie. It's not even a bad. It's a really bad movie. But there's something about it that just is a little entertaining in an unpleasurable way.
Don't worry, guys. We'll be back for Batman and Robin, so there'll be more for this.
Yeah, there'll be more. But anyway,
that's my next episode that I get to do guilty pleasure wise.
Matt and Luke, thanks so much for coming tonight. That was a lot of fun. I hope the audience enjoys it. I think everybody that likes Batman Forever is going to be really pissed off once they hear this. There was a lot of really funny jokes. I was cracking up the whole time. But guys, just one more time, plug your podcast. Tell the audience again where they can catch more of you guys.
You can find us on your favorite podcatcher. You know, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, all that jazz at The Lost Art of Podcast. You can also find us at WordPress.com at The Lost Art of Podcast. And
okay,
there's something to do with Facebook.
Luke can never get the website addresses right. It's The Lost Art of Podcast.wordpress.com and Facebook.com/The Lost Art of Podcast. I always have to correct him.
If I do it bad enough, he'll stop asking me.
That is true. That is true. But honestly, the episodes are way better than our visual online content because, like I said, we're not good on social media apparently. But the episodes are fun.
So, audience, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the show. A couple of things you can do to support Real Talk, a movie podcast. A big thing you can do is subscribe and on your favorite podcast platform. Anytime we release a new episode, it's going to download straight to your library and be waiting for you. If you get an opportunity, leave us a rating or review. That really helps us out. And I really think sometimes when people are looking for podcasts, they do check those reviews to see how many people have and what people are saying. So if you like our show, we'd ask you to do that for us. We'd love to hear from you. We love interacting with our listeners and friends. We're on Twitter at @real_cast. That's R-E-E-L. That's where the fishing joke came from earlier. We're on Facebook, just Real Talk, a movie podcast page. We've got a new, I won't say brand new anymore, we have a new Instagram page, official Real Talk podcast ran by a friend of the show, Ren Burnett. Our email, if for whatever reason you want to email us something, after all the Batman Forever fans, if you want to tell us how much we suck, send those emails to realtalkmoviecast@gmail.com. And finally, we want to thank artist Matt Holland for designing our podcast logo. And for us, that's a wrap.